Hey everyone, Dr. Z, welcome to the Z-Dog MD show. I'm real happy today because I'm getting out of my bubble, the pandemic bubble. We're finally getting in-studio guests. We're social distanced. We have all this ventilation. There's hand sanitizer everywhere. We're paranoid. Everybody's got masks at the ready. But to actually be able to have a conversation with a longtime friend who is working hard to transform medicine, who was there with me at the beginning of Turntable Health, our direct primary care clinic in Las Vegas, helping us figure out how can we deliver care to patients in a way that actually preserves our sanity, gets insurance middlemen out of the picture in a very strategic way, and helps doctors do what they do best, which is take care of patients along with their wonderful staff. And Zach Holdsworth is that guy. Zach, welcome to the show. Forget it. No more intro.
All right, man.
Because the more I talk, the less we get to talk to you. So, dude, so Zach, just for, so people know, Zach's history is like he's an engineer by training and then a Stanford MBA and an entrepreneur. Just tell us how you got to building a company like you run now. You're the CEO and founder of Hint Health. How did you even get to that point? Like,
yeah.
Because healthcare sucks, dude. Why?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in New Zealand.
Of course you did. Yeah. How did I know? You look like a farm boy.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that's a compliment.
It is. Yeah.
And my dad got the first computer in our town. So I grew up in a town of about 20,000 people.
Wow.
I think ever since that moment, I wanted to go to Silicon Valley. So here I am. That's the short version.
So was this in the 80s, 90s?
Yeah, I think it was in, he got the computer in the 80s, I think. Yeah, and I was like trying to program it and everything.
Okay, so what computer was it then?
It was like a Commodore PET.
Oh, dude, you had the Commodore. Yeah. See, I had the Apple IIe.
Yeah.
And I was trying to program on that. But I was trying to learn assembly language, but I had no idea what that meant.
I think maybe by learning to program, I think maybe I was just trying to play games.
Yeah, exactly. Zork.
Yeah. And so I was an engineer. I went to engineering school, electrical engineering, and I went my first part of my career was in coding stuff and sort of embedded electronics, actually for medical devices, over in the UK. And prior to that, I did some stuff actually as well. But fast forward to Stanford. So I got into Stanford and my dream was to go to Silicon Valley. So I was like, this is it. So I jumped on a plane and came over here and wanted to do something entrepreneurial, but wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. So I went and joined a venture firm and it was there that we invested in a healthcare company called Wellness FX, which was, I think, one of the first direct-to-consumer clinical diagnostics company.
Wellness FX. Yeah. I remember that vaguely.
So it's pretty cool. I mean, to be honest, I never thought I would want to work in healthcare because it just, partly because I just wanted to build stuff, but also partly because I just thought it seemed so broken and hard to fix. And I think Wellness FX was one of the first moments where I thought, this is sort of something pretty cool happening. It combined my interest in, I was into pretty hardcore endurance races and stuff like that. And so it kind of combined the human performance side with healthcare.
Ah, so you were interested in ultra marathons and things like that?
I was interested in them. I never got to that hardcore.
Right. Yeah, but hard enough.
But I was working at Wellness FX. So we invested and I jumped ship. That's where I really learned, wow, the system is broken.
So fast forward now, you and I meet in 2013.
13, yep.
And we're in Las Vegas. And you're like, hey, I hear you're starting this clinic. We're building this software that actually powers exactly the kind of clinic you're trying to run. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, we do all that. You're trying to run a membership model, direct primary care clinic. And I was like, how do you even know what that is? Like, how random is that, right? This guy from New Zealand, all I can think of is Flight of the Conchords when we're talking. I'm like, is he Jermaine or is he Brit? I can't tell.
Yeah, which one was it?
It ended up, it's a mix. In my mind, you're like a morph version of both.
Oh, okay.
Which is beautiful.
Not as funny, though.
Have you seen What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just
amazing.
The best movie of all time. Yeah. My gosh.
Have you seen the series, though?
I have. I started watching it, but I was so disappointed that it wasn't as true to the original. Yeah. But what do you think? Is it better?
I wouldn't say it's better, but it is, the humor's the, I mean, it's the same type of humor.
Yeah.
But it's got, yeah, it's, they're both great though.
If you haven't seen it, you guys, vampire stuff, it's really funny. So, so Zach, I meet him and he's like, this is what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, I'm trying to start this clinic where we take insurance out of the picture. You pay me a flat fee just to take care of you. So it's a membership model and a business could pay, an insurance company could pay if they wanted to, an individual could pay. So it disintermediates what we have right now, which is this third party insurance system where it's like, oh, like imagine you're a car mechanic and you have to take your auto insurance to do your oil change. Right. Imagine how painful it would be to do an oil change. It would cost like $500. You'd bill the insurance like $1,000. They'd pay you $200. Yeah. You'd haggle.
Yeah. Even better example is if you had to pay, if you had to call the cops and to get a police report so you could submit an insurance claim to fill your car with gas. That would be the equivalent of a primary care visit.
That's a great analogy because that's the equivalent of a prior auth call.
Yeah.
Call 911, get the cops there to comment on your fender bender when they have better things to do.
No, but I'm talking about all of the example you're talking about is a fender bender. I'm talking about fueling your car up. Like if you go, you know, that's $80, $100.
Yeah.
Like a lot of healthcare, like, you know, a lot of healthcare can be delivered for less than $100.
Yeah.
So, you know, not obviously not all of it, but like the most extreme example for me is, and one of the reasons I think that the US healthcare system is sort of broken, I guess, is because of the fact that for the equivalent of fueling your car up with gas, you need to, you know, like it would be like submitting a claim for, you know, so like that just seems kind of perverted and broken.
Right? And in primary care, where your goal is to keep the car running well, right? Typically, it's not broken. If it is, they can do minor repairs that don't require insurance activation.
Yeah.
So you and I immediately hit it off because we're like, wait, you know, although we were mutually like, are either of our things going to work, right? Because we're both starting up.
Well, right? I mean, I think the reality is with you is you're one of the first people I was talking to. So I was actually pitching you vaporware.
And I knew it too. I'm like, does this guy have a product? Yeah. And I was talking to Josh, who was my partner at the time, and I was telling him, dude, Josh Poineau, like, these guys seem great. They want to do exactly what we want, which is build us a back end that allows us to bill patients directly a flat membership fee, keep track of them, do outreach at the minimum, right? And to do that as a doctor meant I had to go to salesforce.com and build this complex thing and do basically learn how to code. I wasn't going to do it.
Right.
And so you came up with the vaporware and were just like Z-Dog, like a genie out of like a New Zealand genie out of the bottle saying, hey, this is what we're building and we'll work with you to design it. And so at first I was quite skeptical. And then the more you kept showing us what you would deliver as you built it, I was like, this guy is like insane. Like he actually does what he says. So it was quite amazing, even those early days.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting, if you go back to that point in time, or if you back it up a little bit, me and my co-founder, Graham, what we were trying to figure out is actually we worked at Wellness FX together. And I think one of the insights we had there was, you know, like, you look at a lot of healthcare companies or ideas, and if you just play sort of a simple rule, like, okay, if we scaled this to 300 million people, would there still be $1 trillion of waste? And would there still be, really unhappy providers, you know, quality, there's cost overruns, you know, quality's a problem. Like would essentially the healthcare system still be broken, right? And, you know, most ideas, I think, if you give to everyone, it's still broken, right? And so we were trying to figure out, okay, what's something that in theory at scale, if everyone had this type of healthcare interaction, if everyone had this type of relationship with their doctor, right? If the third party payer wasn't in between everything, right? Then, you know, would it fundamentally transform healthcare? And what you were doing at Turntable Health, and what we sort of discovered through just meeting similar type of people doing similar things in the direct primary care movement, we just thought, well, if everyone had this, this actually is, could be sort of the seed or the foundation of kind of fundamentally transforming US healthcare. And so at the time, you know, when we met you, I think you were crazy.
Yes.
But we were crazy too because there weren't many people doing this. But for us, it was like if there were a lot of people doing this, it'd be awesome. And that was kind of the genesis. It was like, you know what, let's just do it. And so we're like, okay, well, we've got to go talk to all the people doing this because there's not a lot. We need to create value. And in order to do that, we have to build a business. So we have to build something that supports this community because we're a technologist, not healthcare professionals.
So see, this is the perfect example of where technology, innovation, business training actually comes to support an idea that would make healthcare better instead of supporting the current legacy model and tweaking the widgets we already have so that we can squeeze more money out of the current widget system. That's what was different about this. Like you said, we're both crazy because it's an absolutely disruptive idea. It's saying, here's the old system, here's us over here. Now that's a terrifying place to be, business-wise and emotionally, because you're alone. Like you said, there were like a handful of people doing it. You know, Erica Bliss out in Washington State
and Dr. Rob, right?
These guys that are pioneers, right? And then, you know, I partnered with Iora that was doing it in a different version, it's a different spin on it, but same disruption, saying, listen, why is it that we can't actualize a human relationship in healthcare that actually takes out middlemen, that focuses on keeping you healthy, that keeps the caregivers happy and the patients happy in a relationship that's unfettered by a lot of outside intrusion? There's no reason you can't do that except for the current system doesn't pay you to do it. So step out of the current system. And what you said was, well, okay, then we got your back on how you're going to get paid. Let us help you build this back end. That's COVID. 100%. Let us build this back end and allow you then to do what you do, which is taking care of patients.
So
smoke and the fact that California is burning aside.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the
world's coming apart.
So that, and that brings me to this point. So world's coming apart, feels like medicine has fallen apart right when we needed it to be together.
Right.
Now, how does this disruption that you and I were envisioning in 2013 actually apply to this mess? Because right now we're talking about getting paid. So what you were building with Hint, and it's hint.com if you guys want to check out the website. What you were building was this infrastructure, the technological backend that allows doctors to spin up what we call a direct primary care practice, meaning don't have to bill insurance, have a relationship directly with your patients, they pay you for your services as a membership like a gym, and you provide services and your goal is aligned with theirs, which is keep them healthy and well, and they see you when they need to and they can call you anytime. It's like concierge for the masses.
Right.
When we were doing that, we thought, okay, now this is a financial model that's risky because the current model of just billing insurance, we know it works.
Right. So we know it sort of works.
We know it works if you see a ton of patients, spend very little time with them, do things to them instead of for them, and maybe do a little Botox on the side.
Right.
That will work in the current model if you're a primary care physician and staff and a nurse practitioner, whatever. So now we have a situation where that whole world imploded because in order to keep that Botox machine and the elective thing machine going, you have to keep seeing patients. Well, it turns out no one's coming to see you because there's a pandemic.
Right.
And we're not paid to actually take care of the pandemic properly. So what ends up happening is physicians, small practices start losing money going out of business.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when COVID hit, I was obviously concerned for obvious reasons, but for the business, I thought, gosh, this could really impact our business as well, right? And so, of course, we see a lot of the kind of traditional fee-for-service groups with large commercial books of business seeing their revenues get cut by 50%. And I'm sitting there going, well, I hope that doesn't happen to our clients, right, for obvious reasons. But of course, what happens is, you know, these providers have a awesome direct relationship with their members, right? And they're at a time of need; they're there for them. So we don't see churn across our customer base in their patients, right? In fact, what we see is a slight growth compared to same time last year, or net neutral roughly. We think, because a lot of our larger customers work directly with employers, where the employer's paying for healthcare. And we thought, gosh, okay, are the employers going to terminate all their contracts? Actually the opposite, right? A lot of our clients are actually thriving right now because they're delivering an awesome value prop. And so not only is the business model more sound, but the care has actually been delivered. And of course, a lot of these, one of my pet peeves, I guess, is you see a lot of kind of innovation happening in telemedicine.
Yeah.
Right. But the innovate, like if you think about it, the innovation is not a, you don't, it's not a clinical innovation, right? The doctors aren't broken. The nurses aren't broken, right? It's not a clinical innovation. It's really a business model innovation. And when you create the right incentives, then things like telemedicine is just, of course I'll do telemedicine. You don't need a special sort of reason to do it. So in this context, you just see folks, they're already doing telemedicine and they just pivot more to that. So it's more of a sort of natural flow state, right? Which I think is really interesting. And so we saw a spike in lots of kind of telemedicine happening, but the underlying business was just sound.
So I'm going to translate that into a simpleton's terms that I can understand. And it's basically this. When you're paid simply to do the right things for patients at the right time, you will do whatever you need to do to care for that patient. That makes sense. And when a pandemic happens, telemedicine is the perfect fit, and direct primary care just says, fine, we're going to do telemedicine.
Right.
We don't care how we get paid for it because we're already getting paid to do the right thing for you.
Right. And by the way, we also have, because we're not disincented to do telemedicine, we already have all the tech set up. We're good. No change.
That's it. Now, does Hint do any of the telemedicine stuff directly, or?
We have a number of partners that have telemedicine platforms like Spruce, for example, would be a good example there, integrated with our APIs. So we're, I'd say, more focused on the administration layer.
Right.
And then we have an ecosystem of technology companies that are integrated with us.
So what would a medical biller coder right now who works in the current system trying to get money out of insurance companies, how would they function in a Hint-based direct primary care ecosystem?
Well, I mean, if you have a mostly direct-to-consumer panel, right, where people are paying out of pocket, then Hint would pretty much automate everything. The monthly bills get automated, the invoicing, if you have, you know, some things that fall outside your membership, you could bill those through Hint. So there's not a lot. I mean, Hint is designed to streamline that process. If you have employer contracts, then there's a little bit more involved there, but at the end of the day, you're just billing an employer and our platform handles that as well.
That makes a lot of sense. So you'd end up taking the money that you would spend on those personnel, mm-hmm. retrain them to do something else in a better economy where the pie is growing. And, you know, when we were using Hint with Turntable, it was a pretty seamless thing. So what would happen is a patient would sign up for our platform online. It would, on the back end, seamless to them, it would take you to the Hint sort of database where you would enter your credit card and all that and put them in a database, and then it would update everything and we'd be able to access it. And then if we wanted to give discounts, we could do that through you. And then it was a really robust way to take care of patients that was pretty seamless on our end. Now, imagine how it is now. So you need a biller.
It was vaporware, by the way. it was like me and Graham in the background doing it all manually.
You know what? I knew it. I knew it because I'd be like, okay, patients are signing up through the website and it's probably just paging Zach directly. Yeah. And he's manually typing in. Yeah. Yeah. And yet by now, it's this massive.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing that's maybe changed since we were working together is, I mean, we built this company on the back of this idea that this is a community we wanted to support.
Right.
And we wanted to be part of this community. And sort of help it thrive. And so a lot of our focus actually as a company has been around building community. One of the things which you know about is Hint Summit, which is coming up. So it's a great kind of event we host. But the thing that we've also been doing is building a community of ecosystem partners that are some technology, some kind of, you've seen really interesting models forming, whereby the folks that are in our community are actually starting to interact with each other. So we've got technology vendors that are integrated and they work with our clients as well, right? That with our community. We have groups that are scaling direct primary care and they work with in sort of affiliate type relationships with providers. Groups like, for example, NextEra Healthcare or Strata, or we've got, you know, HipNation, a number of sort of DPC networks that are forming where they're actually all running through our technology platform. And we're just sort of seeing there's really interesting, innovative new things happening within the community. We've got groups that are starting to build direct primary care into their programs. So for example, Decent, if you sign up for Decent, at the heart of Decent, it's essentially an insurance product designed for the individual market, but they've integrated direct primary care into their model. right? And so there's like really interesting things happening. We're starting to see TPAs and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so there's
I want to dig into what you just said because this is important. So you're talking about when we talk about direct primary care, you're talking about like stepping off the insurance grid and doing something mm-hmm. different with primary care.
Yep.
So what happens if you get so sick you need a hospital or a specialist or a bunch of procedures or labs and all that? And that's where these other entities too can start to form an ecosystem where right. they step up direct to consumer as well, because right now everything's overinflated in price. And so you can create an insurance product, and we did this at Turntable with yep. Nevada Health Co-op, where you carve out the primary care. So the insurance company says, okay, we're going to give you your membership fee to take care of these patients, and then we're going to provide the wraparound catastrophic insurance mm-hmm. if they need anything else. We're going to do it for a flat fee and maybe even put it on the exchange.
Right.
And that way, patient gets amazing care that's curated well, because you're not going to send people to a specialist unless they need it.
Right.
And you're going to do a lot more than a standard primary care can do, because you have the time and the resources and the tools to do it. And so you're going to keep them out of trouble. And the idea then that you create an ecosystem of like-minded people. That's what didn't exist when we were starting Turntable.
Right. Yeah, the thing that's actually interesting is, I mean, I don't think insurance is bad.
Right, right. I agree with you, actually.
I just don't think it should be used to pay for 80 to 90% of healthcare.
Right.
Right? I think when you kind of break it down, the sort of reason things are broken is because there's no price transparency. There's perverse incentives and lack of good incentives.
Do more to make more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's everywhere. I mean, it's crazy. And then, so I'm having a brain. There's always three.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
It's COVID.
Yeah.
It's the COVID and the smoke. So it's perverse incentives.
Lack of price transparency.
Yeah.
And crazy overheads.
Crazy overheads.
There we go.
Yeah.
So administrative burden. And so if you kind of think about, okay, if you were to redesign a system from first principles, right, which is kind of our vision, really, right? Our stated vision is to redesign healthcare to make it easy to get high quality, affordable care, right? Then what you want to do is replace it with price transparent, right? So you always know the cost of the goods you're buying, right?
Heaven forbid in healthcare to know in advance what you're paying.
Right. Yeah. You should eliminate perverse incentives, especially from healthcare.
Yeah.
Right. Like that, you know,
it's the worst place to have a perverse incentive.
Right.
Like if your mechanic's incentivized to give you a fake, you know, oil job.
Yeah, not that big a deal.
Not a big deal. But when you get too many penis extension surgeries.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, I'm just saying it becomes garish after.
Exactly.
But right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So the thing I think is really interesting is direct primary care is really the foundation, like, the reason we gravitated towards direct primary care is because it was, you know, the first manifestation of a working model that stepped outside that traditional third-party payer infrastructure. But it was also fixing primary care, right? Like, and so from there, then you start to think, okay, how do you start to evolve beyond primary care, right? These same concepts apply. You want to have price transparency. You want to eliminate the perverse incentives, and you don't want 50 cents on the dollar going to insurance or whatever it is, right? And so we're starting to see really interesting things happening with specialists, where you have a price transparent pre-negotiated rate for a service or labs or imaging, or seeing really interesting things happening with, you know, we've got clients that literally dispense meds in-house, right, at cost, and they're, you know, it's a buck for a month or something, right? Stuff like that. And so imaging, you know, surgeries, and there's lots of, if you start to apply these concepts kind of more broadly, then that's the ecosystem that we're sort of trying to cultivate and curate.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, it all starts with primary care. So that's why we started with primary care.
And that's what I think differentiated you from a lot of people who are like, we're going to disrupt the tech. They're starting in parts of the system that are so downstream that it doesn't affect change. But when you're starting with 80% of healthcare, which is primary care, probably more, right. Probably more like 90.
It can be more. Yeah.
It can be more. Yeah. You fix that. And I used to say this in my talks, like if you fix primary care, you fix all of medicine, because what happens is that ripples mm-hmm. out. Yep. So then what you said, which I think people have asked about, like, well, okay, what about dermatology? What about radiology? What about labs? What about that? Well, yeah, you can apply the principles of like you said, price transparency, mm-hmm. getting rid of unnecessary overhead, which involves like the billing of insurance and the other things that don't make any sense. And what was the other one you said? It was, now I'm having the brain it was like price transparency.
Perverse incentives. Overhead.
Overhead, right. Yeah. Perverse incentives. Yeah. That was the one, right. Yeah. Man, I tell you.
Who's worse?
I tell you. And you know, both of us are dads. Yeah. So it's like, there are days when I'm just like, you know, before I became a dad, my mind was like a steel trap. Yeah. Now it's filled with like Avatar, The Last Bender.
Literally right now, I'm singing Russian baby songs in my head because my wife's Russian.
So that's amazing.
Yeah, so we're trying to teach her. But they keep playing. I'm learning the Russian alphabet right now.
Dude, my wife, being Chinese, we had all these, you know, like a Mandarin nanny when they were babies because we were both working at Stanford as docs. And all day I was singing these Chinese nursery rhymes and learning Mandarin.
Right.
And to this day now, I know more Mandarin than my kids because they forgot it all and decided they're just going to speak English. But yeah, it's upsetting. So perverse incentives, though, in medicine, for me, this was the primary structural problem. I get paid to do stuff to patients. Well, I'm going to do stuff to patients, and I'm going to rationalize in my mind that I'm a good person for doing it, which means unnecessary spine surgery, unnecessary imaging. But when you're paid, like you said, okay, we have a pre-negotiated rate for a hernia repair or something.
Right.
Well, okay, I'm going to make sure I optimize to take care of that hernia where I can still make a profit, do well by doing good for you. If you have a complication, that's on me. I need to deal with it. Now, there's, of course, a lot of subtlety in the specialty space because you have patients that if they're non-adherent to the plan, they throw a wrench in it. And so you have to figure out how to communicate with them and motivate change.
Yeah.
But it can be done.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's like, you know, the level of change we're talking about, you know, it takes time, right? So the vision sort of we're articulating, I think, is, you know, it's a decade vision, right? But I think with COVID, it's accelerating.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think this change also is going to be driven by employers as well, who are saying, you know what, you know, what's interesting about healthcare is that, all of the stakeholders are upset.
Yeah.
Right. It's just that you're in this complex, Dave Chase, actually, he's got good description. It's a a Gordian knot, an untieable knot, and one of those Rube Goldberg machines.
The Rube Goldberg, like the whole, right. You know, yeah. Like there's a thing pouring in it. It's like beginning of Pee Wee's Big Adventure. Yeah.
And so you know, like the healthcare providers are the ones that I think are getting crushed by it, but all of the stakeholders in the system, right, are starting to have pain.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so I think that something drastic, you know, employers are starting to move as well. We're starting to see some of our more sophisticated clients that have, you know, very large, Proactive MD would be a good example, very large employer contracts. They're growing really quickly right now because they've figured out how to actually save the employer money while also providing a better experience for the, if you think of an employee as a consumer, they're creating a consumer grade experience where they provide access. It's a high quality experience. And then the healthcare providers are also happy as well because they're now practicing in a model that where they're not, I think you talk about a lot, this sort of moral injury, right? Like you don't want to, like, it's not that you want to, refer someone after 4 minutes because that's the only thing you have time to do. So that is technically the medically correct thing to do because it's better than doing nothing. But actually, if you had 30 minutes with this patient, you could probably go to, you know, probably deal with the issues, right? So I think that, you know, I'm going on a bit, but I just think that there's a wave of innovation that's starting to happen where these principles are going to take hold and,
You know, I think the tipping point, I agree with what you're saying. I think the tipping point is going to be the big employers in this country that run 50% of healthcare and have these big levers.
$800 billion. Yeah.
Something big employers. Like you're talking about like, you know, Apples and Walmarts and even smaller, you know.
I think it's, you know, it is the big ones. But what you have to remember, I think, in the US is, you know, I'm going to completely mess up the statistic, but a very large number of working Americans work for a small company.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
I think where we will see the kind of most rapid change is actually going to be hundreds to thousands of employee companies. They're saying to move. The big ones, it's going to take longer.
Yeah.
But it's going to happen.
And I've spoken to the organizations that serve those big companies. All their HR people sit and listen to my story of Health 3.0, right. And they go,
How do I get that? Yeah.
Well, I have this stakeholder and that stakeholder. Mm-hmm. We have so many employees that if we make one change to benefits, they all freak out.
Right.
And they don't understand. And it's very much a challenge. But you're right, with the smaller companies. So they could band together, be part of a network that then has a direct primary care core, mm-hmm. that is facilitated by companies
like that. They don't even need to band together.
Yeah, they can just do it independently.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of group provider, there's lots of direct primary care groups that are local, that serve local employers. And one of the things we've seen, which is really interesting, is if you have, a group in, say, Clint at NextEra in Denver.
Yeah.
He has...
Clint Flanagan in NextEra.
Yeah, exactly. He has, he owns some of his clinics, but a lot of them he doesn't own. He has affiliate relationships with other providers. One of the guys, Eric Kroll, you had on, I think.
Yeah.
He has a small network
in Florida.
Florida. And so if Clint has an employer in Denver, he can subcontract some of those employees to Eric's network.
Got it.
And so we're starting to see really interesting kind of local, because healthcare is local. We're seeing lots of interesting things happening with employers there. But then as it scales, then you are starting to see networks form. But it doesn't need to – I don't believe it. Everyone needs to be part of one big network, right? You want to keep free market, right? You want to sort of allow the fluidity of the market to
This gets to another interesting point. So people talk about healthcare as if it's an all or none thing. So either you have a single payer – government-run mm-hmm. conglomerate,
yep.
or you have the current chaos.
Right.
There's no third way.
Yeah.
And I keep telling people, since 2013, you said it's a decade-long thing. We're 7 years into it. Right. COVID's launching this into the stratosphere because people are realizing, this doesn't work.
Right.
What, really? Yeah, took you this long to figure it out? But the idea then that there's a third way, which is leverage what America's really good at, which is innovation, competition, mm-hmm. and free market, when not bureaucratized by overhead, by a committee at Medicare that actually sets prices, which is almost like a Soviet Politburo in a way, because it's setting prices from above based on input from specialists. They're like, that's why a hip pays you a ton of money, but me preventing you needing that hip by helping you lose weight or whatever, don't get paid at all.
Right.
So that's not...
Well, in the traditional system, you'd lose money because you'd need to probably spend some time with that patient.
Oh, how...
And you'd be unprofitable. And so, that's where I think, it's like, if I was a doctor, I would be bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because I would be like, no, I want to help this patient. And so then I would be depressed. And then what's next, right?
That was my life story. Right. Yeah. So when I started my hospitalist gig, we had plenty of time per patients and a low census and a motivation that we worked in a group where we were salaried. Our responsibility was to, and this is interesting, it gets to the heart of what direct primary care is. It's about doing well financially by doing the right thing for a patient. And that makes you feel good because you went into this not for money, and the moral injury is solved. So when I started my career, I would spend an hour with each patient. I would go through the discharge. I would connect with the nurse and the team and the social worker. And there was this connection and sense that you're a whole and part of a bigger whole. And then you had the capacity to do that because you were salaried and told by your group, which was a partnership of physicians, hey, we're a bunch of multi-specialty people. Your job is to take care of our patients when they get in the hospital, which means you're accountable not just to the patient and your own conscience, but to us, which means we want communication and all that. So that's what we did. And they were willing to sacrifice some of their specialty money that was made by fee for service to pay us to do the right thing for their patients in the hospital and keep them safe. And that gave us a sense of worth that we then did it. And it was beautiful, man. And then we transitioned to a corporation, and then it became an RVU-based production machine where we had to see so many patients, and then Epic went live, and then all this other stuff. Yep. And the next thing you know, the moral injury is real, the time with patients is gone, you start rationalizing why you're doing it, and then you're broken.
Right.
And I tell you, I think there's probably 90% of my audience who feels that, who's felt that.
Yeah.
What you're saying is, well, together we can actually create an alternative system that actually replaces
it's the a movement, man.
It's a movement.
Yep.
When you talk about the Hint Summit, which I spoke at a couple of years back, it was like a highlight, man.
Right.
These guys, these are docs and nurses and staff that are just like activated. They're like revolutionaries.
It's community. I mean, it's this the thing that I think really, if I think back to like why I decided to start this business, I went to the first direct primary care conference. I think it was slightly before or after I met you. I can't remember. But I think it was slightly before I met you. And just the energy, I think it was maybe like 70 people or something there. It was a small conference, but it was high energy, right? And it wasn't sort of a boring thing, right? It was like this really high energy. And I think that's what Hint Summit is, right? It's our version of that. And we like to put on a show and try to create... We're doing it virtually this year, but it's going to be awesome.
I'm speaking for you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, and me and Marty McCary.
Your mate Marty.
Marty is awesome, and he's with this as well. Price transparency, disruption, remove perverse incentives, cut the overhead. He's down with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what we're talking about, but
the community and the revolution. You know, this is again getting to this idea. We're in an election year. Everybody's politicizing everything. Mm-hmm. Ryan Newhoffel, who was at your Hint summit when I spoke, and we became good buddies, and he's just awesome, runs DPC in Kansas, and he was on my show. He proposed something on Medium, a healthcare plan that...
Oh, I should read it.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
It's so amazingly simple, and yet no one will ever vote for it because there's enough stakeholders that will oppose it. But this is how it works. And he says... At the core of it, every American gets a health savings account that's funded either by the government if you're poor, by your employer if you're employed, or by yourself if you're rich. And in that health insurance account, you can spend that on anything medical, but it's preferred that you spend it on a direct primary care membership. So you sign up with a DPC clinic, you pay the membership fee out of that, and they keep you out of trouble. And when you need more care, once you've spent through that little bit, that's when... Medicare for All, which is a scaled back catastrophic Medicare, the government comes in. And if you're rich, you pay a copay and a deductible. And if you're not, the government covers you. Universal coverage, less government spend, competition at the level of the specialists in the direct primary care practices who are looking for that HSA money that you have and are competing for it on cost, quality, convenience, service. And it's uniquely American while egalitarian. So nobody's uncovered. You don't have a homeless guy who can't get care. You don't have, and that would solve the problem.
Right. Yeah. So then the question I have then is, okay, that's a good plan. I think where my head goes to as an entrepreneur is, okay, what can we do right now? And how do we start, you know, like what are actionable things we can do today to actually start moving in that direction? And I think like at the end of the day, you know, those concepts at the end, it's really just about price transparency, right? You're creating free market competition and you're eliminating lots of the overhead, right? And so like, are there ways we can do that without needing it to be pushed through at the like politically?
Yeah.
I think what are the small little steps we can take that get us further along that path? And that's kind of that's I think what maybe is at the essence of what Hint Summit's about. It's like, how do we push this movement forward, right? Like, what's next?
And Hint Summit, that's what I noticed last time when I was there, is people are brainstorming these ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a diverse group of people.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of libertarians who are like, they just want to make something that works that has nothing to do with the current system. And there's a lot of people who are real bleeding hearts who are like, you know what? I get to spend time with my patients. It's great because I can give my poorer patients discounts on the memberships. I give them, I transfer all my savings on labs and drugs to them by dealing directly with them.
Right.
I don't make a profit on it, but they get to, it's for everybody. And then the conservative wing, which is like, hey man, this is like about competition. I'm going to deliver the best service. Mm-hmm. I'm going to beat all these other guys and I'm going to do it in a way that makes me have the autonomy to practice the way I want. I don't want an insurance company telling me what to do. It is the perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I think my, you know, maybe without, you know, going into politics, I think that I can't vote, by the way.
Yeah, because you're a illegal immigrant. Yeah. I'm going to build a wall in New Zealand.
I'm a legal one.
Oh, shucks. I was going to, after
because I married an American.
Oh, nice. Yeah. But you're singing Russian?
Well, she's a Ukrainian.
So she's a spy.
Yeah, she, yeah, exactly. Yeah, she came over here. Honestly, I do believe she might be a spy. At least she knows all my passwords.
There you go. Well, now you know. Well, now, so if you sign up for Hint, it's like signing up for TikTok. You're just giving the Chinese government.
Exactly. Well, unfortunately, my team revoked all my access. So.
Oh, man.
Because we're very compliant and everything. But
So
the thing, you know, the point I was going to make is that, if you, at the end of the day, I think these concepts are, I believe, one of the few truly kind of bipartisan actually concepts. You know, and so like at the end of the day, it's at the end of the day, it's like whoever gets in, it's going to be good, I think, for this movement.
Yeah.
And back to Hint Summit, I think the thing that we've been trying to do with Hint Summit is make it a high energy, restorative event.
Mm.
Versus one we sort of have to put energy in, right? So there's like lots of we had you with the entertainment at a couple of events ago, but we try to create this sort of almost like it's hard to explain, but we try to create this high energy sort of interactive sort of networking. You get to meet people, you get interesting content. We bring in speakers that are not even necessarily within healthcare.
Mm.
So last year we had Dr. Jennifer Acker from Stanford doing a talk on the power of story. Which is a really interesting, is relevant, right? Because if you think about it, at the end of the day, like this movement is about story, right?
The movement's about story. Taking care of patients is about story. It's all narrative. We're storytelling creatures and receiving creatures.
Yeah. So we try to bring different, you know, interesting sort of thought vectors in. And then we also, of course...
Did you call them thought vectors?
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. I've never heard that. And they're always like, oh, I have a bunch of thought leaders. No. I'm calling myself a thought vector from now
on. I just made that one up.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It's a viral kind of feeling, like a meme, how do thoughts spread? Yeah. I love that. Keep going. Sorry, vector. I'm never going to forget that. You're going to see it now in my ZDog MD, healthcare's leading thought vector. And then you're going to sue me.
My team's going to give me shit when they hear me.
Of course they are. Yeah. That's good. So you were saying, so you're bringing all these thought vectors, you create this community, a sense of energy, everybody sharing ideas, outside speakers.
Yeah. The challenge this year is like, how do we take a physical event and take it virtual?
Yeah.
Right. So we're, we've working with some cool technology. We've got, lots of different ideas we're brainstorming, but I think it's going to be cool. It's going to be awesome.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's like the world is now in this virtual space. Right. So we're all getting the hang of this. Yeah. But I think if anyone's going to do it good, it's going to be you guys, because you guys are already telemed technology enabled.
Well, I mean, like the thing I'm trying to figure out is I'm personally sick of being on Zoom all day.
I hate it.
Right. But so then my challenge to my team is, how can we make this not feel like you're on another Zoom?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think we'll pull it off. But
nudity helps.
Yeah.
That's what I've found.
Well, that's why we've signed you up.
You know what? After the multiple penis extension surgeries, I think it kind of ties it full circle. I mean, and it's a challenge. And what I found is when I first started doing virtual talks, I realized I was like, oh, this is terrible. I'm a in-person person for this kind of thing. And then I did a few and I'm like, no, this is like an extension of what we do on Facebook.
Right.
You can engage with people, make them feel like they're the only person in the room watching. And it really is a beautiful feeling of flow state, both for audience and for speaker.
Yep.
So I'm excited for this thing. And, you know, Marty and I are going to do something crazy. You know it's going to be insane.
Yeah, it better be.
We may just come out saying, look, never use Hint. They suck.
Sounds awesome.
I mean, because then, that's true disruption. Disrupt the disruptors. But the nice thing about those summits is, again, you get also like minds. So then you end up with a list of people that are there. You can network with them.
We're doing speed dating. We're going to have such an interesting, you can sort of figure out the types of people we're going to meet. And then we're going to match you up in the sort of speed dating type thing.
Nice.
So there's some cool stuff there. We've got lots of our kind of sponsors, but all our sponsors are part of our community.
Mm.
So in order to sponsor Hint Summit, you need to somehow be kind of part of our community, because it's sort of like a little bit of a vetting process.
Right. So you're not sponsored by Aetna?
No. So we've got, so then we challenge the sponsors to try to do more than what you'd you want to make sure you're creating value for the people that are there.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not a pitch. It's like, who can create the most value? right? Who can be the most interesting, who can share the most knowledge, then if that, whoever that person is going to get the most business, right? Mm. And so that there's sort of things we do like that. I mean, it just a little bit reminds me of some of the stuff you do where you're really trying to make sure that you're bringing in authentic guests to your you know, people.
I mean, which, other than present me, of course, company yeah. accepted, yeah. right? You're just a Stanford MBA shill trying to sell me something, yeah. and I'm not buying it. No, no, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So if it doesn't add value for the tribe, then why do it, right? Including sponsors.
Right.
Yeah. So that's awesome. And the thing is, like,
summit.hint.com.
Summit.
I got it in there.
You got it. You got your shill pitch
but no one
I'll put it in. I'll put it in the description.
Yeah, but no one's going to understand anything I said, so you're going to have to write it down for them.
It's your New Zealand accent. They're just going to be like, what is this, summer at Flint dot what? Now, I'll put it in the description, and actually, there'll be a special link that we'll put in that associates with me so that you guys can quantify how awesome my platform is, right? Because it's like, look at that. And I'm going to be there. So the pitch, guys, is if you want to see me speak, it's like a super bargain too. I mean, I won't say the price because you might change it, but it's like...
No, we're not changing the price.
I thought you were going to lower it just for me, dude.
Oh,
awkward. Awkward. Edit.
It's cheap.
That's right. Yeah. No, it is.
It's not a profit. We're not doing it for profit.
Yeah. You don't make money on it. I know that. Yeah.
We might make a little bit, but it's not like... much, right?
And it goes right back into next year's. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've been trying to get somewhat to the point where it's profitable, but just so that we can fund more kick-ass things.
Yeah, exactly. After, right? Yeah, yeah. Because the original plan before COVID was like this massive thing in Colorado, right?
Yeah, we had Red Rocks renting out this like epic spot at Red Rocks. Super cool parties.
I had backing dancers planned. Yeah, like it was a whole
fireworks
thing. Yeah, exactly. All the whole thing, pyrotechnics. Yeah. And then it was like, womp, 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 COVID. But you know, again, I think COVID has been a mixed. You never let a good crisis go to waste. Yeah. This is the turbocharge that this movement needs, because these are the guys that aren't going out of business during this
delivering
time.
Delivering value to people that need healthcare right now.
At the most
like,
vulnerable.
The thing that kind of blows my mind is like, I've heard stories about, because we have some clients that are sort of in a transition phase.
Yeah.
Where they've got you know, their existing commercial insurance broker business, but they're opening up a direct primary care business. And like, I'm on the call, I'm sort of calling, I'm, you know, catching up with a client or whatever. Oh, you said to lay off half our doctors.
We have to lay off half our doctors.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, what? Like, don't we, right now, don't we need doctors? Right? So it's just a, you know, but that was not from their direct primary care business. That was from their
commercial business where they're billing fee for service and you need elective procedures to make money.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And so like, to me, that's just like the, you know, the essence of this movement. It's like, this is a alternative to kind of the status quo that is working, that that all stakeholders benefit.
Mm. Right?
But it's not easy necessarily, but it's possible. And there are, like, it's getting easier as well.
Well, you know, so that brings me to an interesting thing, because I people wonder, like, well, what happened to Turntable Health? Like, we started in 2013. We were your first client. You know, well, I'll tell you guys what happened. Hint ruined us. Okay. These guys were the worst. Like, if it wasn't for this terrible software. No, but what actually happened was the three things you talked about, perverse incentives, overhead, and price transparency. Sure. We had price transparency. Mm-hmm. We had wonderful incentives to do the right thing for patients. What we didn't have was low overhead. So because we were venture backed, part of a big thing, in downtown Las Vegas as part of this thing, is not a great location for what we were trying to do. We had a ton of overhead in our rent space. We had a ton of overhead in the size of our team and trying to catch up with patients. And we partnered with an insurance company that did the thing we were talking about, but then went out of business.
Right.
So in that case, our overhead then exceeded our income and we lost 3,000 patients overnight. And that was the end of us. That is not a scalable failure. In other words, that's not a tale that says, oh, I'm not going to start a direct primary care clinic Health 3.0 now because look what happened to Turntable. No, Turntable screwed up that way. Right. You could actually do it much better, much more efficiently using something like Hint, using less overhead, being smarter about how you do it, having full control over what you're doing, and thrive in a pandemic when everyone else is laying off half their doctors.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's the punchline here, is we need these out-of-the-box ways to think about this stuff. Otherwise, you know, because the thing I am concerned about is, let's say we have a political upheaval and something changes, and then we go into a single-payer system, which great, everybody's covered. But now what you do is you codify, you solidify the current broken system by paying for it with government money.
Right.
And I think it's incumbent on us now to show, I don't care who pays for it.
Yeah, I mean, in a single payer system, which, you know, I personally don't think it's likely,
right.
But in a single payer system, as a single payer, the way I'd think about it is, who would I want? Like, do I want to pay something? Do I want to pay for a, you know, cost-effective, awesome solution that's working, or a expensive broken system?
That's it,
right? And so, you know, these concepts that, you know, would be relevant in that world, right? And I think that the provider organizations that would thrive in that type of situation would be ones that have figured out how to create value in a way that is sustainable.
And that's what I keep saying, is like, why would you want to pay for something that's broken with common money?
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with common money going towards things that actually work.
Yeah.
So fix the model, which that's what you're doing, and then you can actually pay for people who can't afford it with government money. That's fine. But until then, all you're doing is you're going to solidify something. That's why, look, the Europeans have better systems than us, because I think, honestly, they do less to people.
Right.
They focus a little more on prevention. And there's less, like, you know, doing stuff to people and causing harm. But then they have the same problems we have, which is they don't really, their primary care isn't really preventing disease. Their health IT isn't great. Their right. doctors are suffering, all this other stuff. Same problems. They ask us, they're asking me, like, well, so how did you solve this with this health 3.0 model? And it's like, well, we did this and this and this. The key thing is, how do you pay for it?
Right.
Right. And so generating new innovative business models to actually fund what actually works in a care system model is what initially got us together.
Right.
And now we're still friends after how many years, and we're still working together in even these loose capacities, because it's a movement.
Right.
And you're looking, I'm looking at the people who are part of this movement, right? It gets exciting. Like, you get goosebumps thinking you're going to be part of something that's going to transform something that affects people's lives in a way that almost nothing else does.
Yeah. No, but you basically, like, the quote, something along the lines of, you don't innovate by fixing things within the system, right? Or you don't, but you innovate by disrupt it by starting something new.
You know the,
right? Like, by innovating from a clean slate, basically. Like, that's what really,
that's the nature of disruption. And healthcare needs its Wright brothers, its plane to, right, kind of, and it's not going to be brothers anymore. It's not going to be an individual. It's going to be a movement of people.
Right.
Because we're too complex now for one brilliant inventor to come up with the solution. It's going to be a bunch of people going, you know what, this works. And that's right. What I see in this direct primary care community. I saw it at Hint Summit. I'm going to see it again at this virtual Hint Summit, virtually, hopefully, which I think, you know, this is what our Facebook thing is. It's like, right, a bunch of people that are like, hey, we don't even know, we don't all agree on stuff, but we agree where we want to be. We're like, I like to be here. Okay. So let's figure out, like you said, all healthcare is local. It is.
Yeah.
Figure out the right answer. That's why I think a top down one size fits all is not going to work.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shoot.
Awesome, man.
Man, this was like good times.
Yeah.
Gosh. I mean, it's,
you know what, one thing I'll say is, you know, I may not have started this business if it wasn't for you.
Wait a minute.
Because I, you know, when you're starting something, it's like one of the key hypotheses you need to test is, will someone want to buy this thing?
Mm.
Right. And so when I talk about it, it's like mostly vaporware.
Yeah.
Like, what I mean by that is, like, I was trying, really the hypothesis I was testing wasn't, can I build this? It's, can I sell it?
Mm.
And so that there's a few people that kind of lent in early that tipped us onto the let's do this, because in a way, like, what we were doing from purely from a business perspective, it's a little bit irrational.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially when you're raising venture capital and stuff like that, because you, in order to build a venture scale business, like, you need to be people to buy the things.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but there was a little bit of like, you know what, this is the right thing to do. And if this works, it will help fundamentally transform US healthcare. So your sort of like early, you know what, let's give the vaporware a shot. You know, that sort of was part of the journey, I think.
That's really great to hear. Because
wasn't all vaporware.
Yeah, it was 70% vaporware and then 30% BS. But at the time, I remember we really agonized over it's funny because, you know, we had just met. You had some degrees and interesting things behind your name, which resonate with a guy who has degrees and interesting things. But we also know kind of that can be bullshit. Right. And as imposters ourselves, we feel like imposters sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always like, well, is this real? Like, what are we doing? But then what it is you back it up with actual action. So you get on a call, you start to hash out what's going on. You realize that Zach is really open to the things we're saying. We're saying, these are the things we need. Are you able to do that? Well, yeah, we can make that work. It wouldn't work for all our clients, but we can probably do that since you're an early adopter. And we're like, okay, cool. This is great. And in the end, it turned out by taking that chance, by being open to something different and not, because we were using Salesforce.
Right.
And we spent.
Yeah, you were customizing an implementation of Salesforce, which is like, you know, at the time, probably the right call.
That's right.
Now I say, if you're doing that, you're insane.
An idiot. Yeah.
And it's not the Salesforce isn't great. It's just that we've built something specifically designed for.
This is much better. And the minute we started using it and customizing.
Wait, you have an integration with Salesforce now.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So,
if you want to use Salesforce as a CRM, you can integrate and we'll real-time share data between your Hint instance and your Salesforce instance.
That's customer relationship manager, for those who don't know. There's like all these nurses right now that are like, what the hell are they talking about? Yeah. But no, it's true. And that's nice because then people can actually do marketing integration and things like that. But yeah, so it was great. And then years later to see your success and how you guys have helped so many doctors and talk to the doctors on the front line and go, God, you know, we were part of that beginning of it.
Right, yeah,
and, you know, some people are like, "What? Weren't you really bummed when Turntable fell apart and all of this?" And I'm like, no, it was like one of the best days of my life because I knew we'd done this thing, this huge burden of trying to make this thing work in a very difficult circumstances was off. I knew that my staff were going to great places.
Right.
And now I was free to go to the next level of evangelizing this and without being muzzled.
Right.
Because when you run a business, like, you know how it is. Like, you can't just go out and say all the things
that you want to say.
That you want to say. Because someone on the board is sitting there going, you know that time you talked about penis enlargement surgery on your show 25 times?
I know,
and,
right?
And kept doubling down on it. You know, that's not really consistent with our brand, right? And now I'm just like, well, it's consistent with my brand. but the idea that
you're going to have reductions coming on.
You know what? That's the thing.
You went too far.
My surgeons, you know, they said, you know, we've never seen anything like this now.
Is
it's
that
time.
Actually a thing?
Enlargement or reduction?
I don't know. Now we're actually going to have a
listen,
conversation.
The only thing I know about this space is from my email inbox in my spam folder.
Okay, got it. Okay,
and it's usually a brick tied to a string or something, right? There's actually a funny, have you ever seen the movie Waiting for Guffman?
No.
It's like an old Christopher Guest movie, like, you know, Best in Show, the guy who does all that. But Fred Willard, who recently passed away, fantastic comedian, had this whole thing where he was like, you know, most people, I had a minor surgical procedure. Most people really would be envious of it. It's a penis reduction surgery. It was botched. And his wife is just sitting there like uncomfortably next to him while they're interviewing. It's a very funny scene. But of course, no one has watched that movie except for me. Now that we've talked about penises for the last half of it, I think we should wrap up by saying, guys, Zach Holdsworth, Transforming Healthcare, Direct Primary Care. I will link on my website, zdogmd.com/Zach. That's what I'm going to call it. Actually, no, /hint. How about that? Let's do it that way.
Yeah, might be a bit more relevant.
A little more relevant. Yeah. And /hint, on that site, and I'll link to it in the descriptions, we'll have links to other direct primary care people we've talked to, like Eric Kroll.
Yep.
Links to the Hint Summit, so that you can sign up for this year in 2020.
Yep.
And other information that I've done on Health 3.0, Turntable, and other stuff like that, so people can start going to your website, going to my website, learning about this, because it's a movement. And then, man, the next stage is getting those specialists wrapped in.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. No, and I think there's, like, we're seeing that start to happen organically, right? And so from a technology perspective, we're fast following that.
Right?
So that's, you know, Hint is expanding into that as well, which is exciting.
That's fantastic. I'm real excited for you guys. Guys, I mean, this is the thing now. We've done our...
How do we say goodbye? I don't know.
How do we even do it? We put our masks on like this, and we're like, okay, we're done. Now we've done our show. We're not going to be able to socially distance when we go out there, so Now we're big, big, big dorks, which takes it, we're the, it's the mass of the great equalizer, right? So guys, thank you so much for watching the show. Thanks to Zach Holdsworth from Hint.com. Go to that website and check out what they're doing. Check out the Hint Summit stuff. Share this video. Thanks to everyone who follows and supports the show. I love you guys. Stay well, and we out. Peace.